Hello, brainstormers. It's Bob Preston here, your host, and I'm letting you all know that I have some big plans to relaunch Property Management Brainstorm with a new definition and sense of purpose coming in August of 2023. In the meantime, I have some other heavy lifting that requires my focus and attention on the NARPM National Board of Directors as a Southwestern Regional Vice President and in my new role as Western Regional Director for Pure Property Management. But to keep posting actively, I'm producing some reruns of the best podcast episodes, what I'm calling PMB Classic Rewind. This episode gets into what it takes to run a solid property management company and the benefits that property managers and property management company owners receive from being a member of NARPM. It's with Kelly Tollefson of T-Square Properties.
Welcome to the Property Management Brainstorm Show with Bob Preston. Bob is the lead consultant and podcast host at Property Management Brainstorm, the consulting and strategic planning company dedicated to the property management industry. This podcast is for property managers and company owners seeking an in-depth look into current trends toward adding doors, growing recurring revenue, and building a high-profit property management business. You'll hear from leading professionals on hot topics, success stories, and strategies for expanding your company and assuring your property portfolios are managed efficiently. Now, here is your host, Bob Preston.
On this episode of Property Management Brainstorm, the focus will be on what it takes to build and grow a property management business from the ground up and the importance of the support provided by our national organization, which is called the National Association of Residential Property Managers, otherwise known as NARPM, N-A-R-P-M. Today's guest on the show is none other than Kelly Tollefson, owner of T-Square Properties in Washington State, which she has grown from the ground up and also is the national president of our industry organization, which I just mentioned, NARPM. Kelly is also, in addition to that, a mentor and coach for hire, so we will get into that a bit too. Kelly, hey, I don't think any of us in the property management business said as kids, I want to be a property manager when I grow up, right? And I always got to laugh about that. But you've been on a journey yourself, and I would love to hear that about you, your background, and how you started in property management.
That is a great comment. My husband and I have three children, and not one of them has said, as they've watched it and grown up in it, that they want to be a property manager. So you're right. I don't think even knowing about it.
I sucked my son into it, by the way.
He now works at the company. We haven't been able to do it yet. We do have a daughter that's in the industry, but not here in our company. She's works in Idaho. So you're right. For us, it started out as just as a personal investment plan for us. My husband decided that he would get his broker's license and work his way, actually, in Southern California. We lived down in Mission Viejo for a couple years right after we first got married. And he found some HUD foreclosures, and that was the niche that we kind of logged into and followed that track for a while. And then as we started building a family and I became a stay-at-home mom, it gave us great flexibility to be able to turn properties, earn an income while my husband was working in the corporate world, and build a little portfolio for ourselves. And we got to know so much about it that we decided, wow, we could maybe do this as a business. And so again, still staying home, you know, one neighbor came over one time and said, hey, I'm moving to Eastern Washington. I have 5 rentals. I know you guys have some. Can you rent them? Can you manage them for me? And we kind of said, yeah, I think we can. And so that built and built and built. And so
brick by brick.
Exactly. Yeah. I was a much better I'm a much better manager for other people than a landlord for myself. I'm just a softy when it comes to dealing with tenants and stuff. So
my wife says that about me regarding maintenance of our home. Like, you take care of all these homes. Why can't you keep ours maintained?
That's true. It's like the cobbler's children have no shoes, right?
Okay. So you built properties brick by brick. I understand you guys also at T-Square, you do HOAs as well. I'm curious how you got into that and what that first step into HOA life was like.
That it was another kind of accident. I think a lot of us that have a management company and have gotten into this as a business, third-party managers, we got into it almost by accident. You know, like you said, nobody wakes up and says, well, there are some people who do it very intentionally. However, so that happened with our HOA management as well. We had a fourplex in Seattle call us and say, hey, do you guys do management of associations? And I just had a conversation with them. And I thought to myself, well, it can't be that different than managing rental properties. And back then, 15, 16 years ago, it was very different. And today that we did start managing that fourplex. And then we actually, again, a funny story, we lost a bookkeeper at a sudden, she had lost her mother suddenly and had to exit the workforce and go take care of that whole situation. And so I called a friend of mine that I knew through PTA and our kids played together. And I said, "Hey, Teresa, are you interested in coming and doing some bookkeeping for us and, you know, filling in?" And she said, "Sure." And then we got this fourplex during that period. And she really took to it, started kind of managing that. And now she's our vice president of community associations and managing a team of seven people. And we manage about 86 associations, about 4,000 doors.
My goodness. Wow. That's a cool story about her. And I'm sure she knows a lot about bookkeeping when it comes to associations. Well, hey, what's it been like along the way? I mean, I think this has been many years, you know, since you started your company and now you're at this place in your life and your business. What were some of the hurdles you faced and what's it been like along the way?
So I think, you know, some may say it's unique. I know there's a lot of business owners and a lot of property managers, and maybe it's all different industries, but in our industry, working with family, my husband and I built T-Square together. I started it while he was still working the corporate world and putting food on the table and paying the mortgage while we kind of built up the business. But since that was only about a year, and then he came on board, and that's been one of the challenges is working with family. You know, there's definitely a fine line of communication, and when do you stop that communication at home and keep it at work, and where does that blending come into play? And that's one of the unique things that I've experienced. I think the other thing in building your own business is that it needs to take on your own personality. You know, everybody runs their businesses differently. You know, we talk about a portfolio style, and then we talk about a departmental style. We talk about employees, mm-hmm. or 1099 folks that work for you, and or W-2 or 1099 folks. And I think it all gets down to what's your true style. And where can you thrive and have your business thrive in those unique opportunities? You know, just in my experience in the last year, being president-elect and then this year president, talking to different people, you know, just learning about how people are doing it. There's so many different ways to skin a cat, if you will, that knowing what that style is that helps you get to the next level, I guess, is probably one of the things I've learned.
Yeah. You know, I like to compare to their strategies and tactics, and those things are how you price, how you, you know, do your pricing, how you show properties, what you do in terms of your accounting, how you communicate with the owners, all that's, you know, kind of your strategies and tactics, the basic blocking and tackling of property management. But I like to think that companies who have a solid foundation in some guiding principles or maybe personal values are the ones that really have that foundation that can make it through all the years and are built to last and weather the storm. And it seems like you kind of have that same philosophy.
We do. And we actually went in, I guess if I had, you know, there's so many things that you sit back after you've had it worked on your company and you've worked in your company for so long and you think, gosh, I wish I would have known this sooner. Or, you know, I wish I would have written down all the processes as I was doing them instead of like pulling my hair out, trying to do everything all at the same time. And we have developed over the years guiding principles. And basically for us, what it is when you don't know what to do, when you can't decide or it's not a clear decision, what are our guiding principles? And so we've got 8 of them. They're on our website, and we actually have filled out or had our team come up with an acronym. And it's actually meat ribs. And so it's mutual respect. I had to pull them out to get them all. Enjoyment, accountability, transparency. Let's see, the B is betterment. S is selflessness, you know, responsiveness, all those kinds of things. And it's not so much the word, but it's the characteristic behind it. So betterment is making the job and our careers better for one another, while at the same time that creates a betterment for the company. You know, the integrity, the transparency, how much, you know, letting the owners and clients and tenants and vendors see exactly what we're doing. We have nothing to hide.
Wow. That foundation sounds really similar to what we have here at my company as well. I'm a big believer in that. I have a company culture chart that's up, you know, in our main office entrance area. Our guiding principles are right there. And I always show it to people who come and interview, because I just tell them up front, look, if you can't You know, if you can't live to these standards, if you work here, then maybe this isn't the place for you.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think that kind of has to be the way
we got,
it is.
Yeah,
right?
We got a big poster up in our lunchroom kind of thing. So everybody sees it. Well, pre-COVID, everyone would see it every day when they were.
Right. Has that been part of the challenge, finding the right people to fit within your company culture and your high standards?
Huge. And I for us, we had one employee voluntarily leave for another opportunity in 2017. And it wasn't until about probably at least 2 years that we could right the ship. And not just that position. It just seemed it was one person after another, either we weren't hiring the right person, or there was somebody else looking for something else. And I don't know if it was a function of the unemployment rate, because it was so low through that period of time, 2017 to 2019, but we had a major shift in our company benefits. We started a fund committee. I really started focusing on culture, because we were meeting the salary requirements of people. But there was just something, I'm not sure if it was us or them or what it was or the combination of everything, but yes, keeping the right people on the right spot, the right seat on the bus has been really difficult. And I have to say right now, of all the work we've put into it as a team and myself and the books I've read, you know, the networking I've done with the NARPM and so on, I think we're in a really good spot now to have a great team, and we're all rowing in the same direction and we're all seeing the same vision. And it's really been hard work to get here, but every day I cross my fingers hoping that the apple cart won't get upset again.
You know, listening to you talk, the parallels between your journey and the journey I've had here with my company are so similar, because you can have great guiding principles and values as a company, but it doesn't necessarily translate into culture unless your people are willing to take that baton and integrate it into the workplace, right? You can't just snap your fingers and expect your team to, you know, recite these values and this company culture gunpoint, right?
Right.
So yeah, I think the same thing. I think one by one, though, if you can get the right people in place, then over the course of time, whether it's by osmosis or whatever, your company will just eventually ooze and emit this cultural and state of values that people can feel when they come into the company, or even when they call on the phone, right? And so I get that now. I get people complimenting the company, like, oh my God, your people are fantastic. How'd you find such good people? And well, not easy, right? It's a long, long haul and a long journey to get there.
I think it's an upward spiral, you know, when it just like the downward spiral happens, it's contagious both directions. And I think one of the things I've noticed even recently with, you know, our big concern when COVID happened was people, you know, working from home and what was that going to look like? Because as company owners and property managers, I'm a self-admitted control person, right? I don't like to necessarily freak, but I like to have control of things. And now that everybody's home, there's so much more communication going on. Like a leasing agent might be out doing a move in and she'll find something that's not going right, or a move out and sees she sent a picture the other day of this skanky looking shower floor, and we could all chime in and she could feel a part of a team with our chat, with the team's chat that we use. And, you know, there's a lot of humor going on. There's just the support. And I feel like now our team culture is so much stronger because we have this ongoing communication that wasn't there pre-COVID.
Yeah, but you have the people in place now and the culture in place before COVID hit to allow that to flourish, right?
Yes.
And I was really nervous about it as well. In fact, when COVID hit, I started having daily Zoom calls, you know, talk about being a control freak, every morning at 9 o'clock, right? And then I'm realizing, okay, wait a minute, you know, these people are super motivated. They're all doing their job. Let's go to twice a week, you know, now it's kind of back to our norm, which is a once a week staff meeting. Hey, that was a really great snapshot into your background and your perspective on property management. I'd like to shift gears here and talk a little bit about NARPM. So you're kind of the big kahuna here, right? You got the president of NARPM in the house. And we're so glad you're on the Brainstorm. I would just love to hear what your take is on NARPM. And maybe you can just tell our listeners in the nutshell what NARPM's all about.
So NARPM, the National Association of Residential Property Managers, for those of you that aren't members, I have a girlfriend that thinks it sounds like a disease, NARPM, but it isn't a disease. If it is, I hope everyone catches it, because it's one of the best organizations that I stumbled upon. I'll never forget. You know, actually, it was in this very room before we had an office outside of the house when I had a tenant I didn't know what to deal with. And I think this was pre Google. It was 15 years ago. I don't even know what search engine it was. And looking on the internet for how do I get rid of a tenant, or how do I find support as a landlord? And there were all these tenant advocacy groups. And I stumbled across NARPM at that time, and it was 2005. And I said, wow, this looks like a great organization. It's a landlord or management company support organization, right? And so I was able to get some information. I was able to get plugged into my local King County Seattle chapter. And it was almost like the sky, the clouds parted and the sun came down and the rays were on me. And
the veil was lifted, whatever the analogy is.
Oh my gosh, look at this wealth of information. Not only the wealth of information that was so fascinating to me, but it was the amount, the level of sharing that people were willing to do. My background is at Ford Motor Company. When I got out of college, I started working at within the sales and marketing division in California in the San Francisco Bay Area for Ford Motor Company. That is not a company that shares secrets. Nobody shares secrets.
No.
Dealers, you know, I would call on the dealerships, and you know, I was the factory rep, you know, shipping cars to them and so on. And they don't share secrets. So I'll never forget my very first convention. It was in Salt Lake City. And I was there and I was thinking, I got the feeling that maybe this might be kind of similar to a used car salesman kind of group. And it was one of the most professional organizations and professional group of people I'd ever been exposed to. And I felt like we call it in NARPM the fire hose experience, where you go to a meeting or a convention, or even sometimes a chapter meeting, but our conference, the state conference or something, you get so much information that it's almost overwhelming. And that to me is what NARPM is. There's just a plethora of information, and it's almost difficult to pare it down to what am I looking for. Over the years now, you know, there's the Facebook groups and there's all kinds of different ways of getting the information. And the website has really come a long way in that time. That was my NARPM journey. And the minute I started meeting people, I was hooked. They were so helpful. Everyone was like, oh, you need this? Oh, you don't know how to handle this? Oh, you're having an audit? Let me help you. You know, those everything. And it has continued this way. It hasn't waned at all.
And you've been in NARPM now for 15 years or so, you said?
15 years. Yeah, this year it was 15 years.
I'm always able to, regardless of the event, whether it be a chapter meeting or a call where I jump in, maybe something you guys have done through National, always able to pull several what I call nuggets, right? Like, that is really interesting. You know, that's something I've got to try to do either, you know, maybe I try to do it right then quickly, or maybe it's something I might not be able to do until our company kind of reaches the next step. But it always plants these really cool seeds and ideas, yes. You know.
That's the thing, Bob, is like right now I might need especially let's just use this, you know, pre or post COVID experience. I might need some sort of an inspection app that maybe I didn't need a year ago because I had this great system that was working really well. I didn't need to change it. Things were working. So now I've got this something I need to do because the circumstances are changing and the market is changing and our world is changing. I know I can find it at NARPM. I know I can either find someone that's doing it, or I can find the company that's doing it, or several companies that are doing it that I can reach out to. I reach out and people reach out to me about different things I'm doing and what are they doing. And it's just, I don't know. It's a beautiful synergy of a knowledge, I guess, is probably the best way to put it.
Yeah. Property management business has a lot of systems in it, right? Systems and processes. And over time, I found at my company, as the company's grown, those tend to break because the legacy way of doing things maybe isn't keeping up with the pace of your company growth, or as you said, the market changes, or maybe the responsiveness people expect. So, you know, having access to all these cool solutions from our affiliate partners and from people's experience in implementing them has been really fantastic for me. I know it's a big benefit. So look, you've been involved now at NARPM for many years and you've now kind of come up through leadership. I guess the question is, what motivated you to get involved in NARPM leadership? And now how's it been as the national president? I mean, that's a pretty big role.
It is. And what motivated me, it was almost like, the more I got, the more I wanted to give back. And the more I gave back, the more I received. So it was this, you know, spiral. The more I wanted to get involved, the more I wanted to show others and be a part of the demonstration of how beneficial this organization can be. And it's not a perfect organization, but most everyone gains something from it. And I contend, I've always been a believer that what you put into it is what you're going to get out of it. But I wanted to be able to give back. And as, the more I gave back, the more, again, I received. And so it just kept spiraling and spiraling. And so I just continued on through the journey. I actually applied for the Northwest RVP five times. I think I was approved. I was appointed or nominated the fifth time. So I was really very set on being able to give back and to learn and take that knowledge and pass it on.
That's interesting. Cause you know, I got more interested. I will tell you, when I first started my business and I heard about NARPM, I was so busy and so consumed with my business that I didn't have time to really even join. I think I joined for a while and then I sort of dropped out and I never really got involved. And then it wasn't until a few years ago that I really started embracing it. And part of that was because I had the ability to do that because I built a you know, we kind of talked about our team building. I had a better team that allowed me some headroom to be able to go do that. So I guess, what would you say to those people like I used to be, you know, yeah. The people are like, well, hey, I don't have time. Why would I want to do NARPM? What's your plea to them, I guess, for joining?
To be frank, I think people, you are spending more time not joining because you're not learning about the more efficient ways, the more effective ways to do things or even just getting the knowledge. You know, one of the things I will never forget, and maybe you recall this in your early career, is oftentimes when you're building your business, you're doing it, you're by yourself, you don't have anybody else on your team, and you feel like you're this lone person without a life jacket in the middle of this stormy sea. And going to the meetings and just even now, you know, just talking to my NARPM friends and people that I've become really good friends with, I don't feel alone. And I think that feeling alone or that not feeling, having that kind of a solution of not feeling alone helps you traject further. It helps you move forward and gives you the confidence that, hey, somebody else has been on this in this boat and I'm not here by myself and someone's traveled this road. I know I can do it because I can see these people doing it and maybe they could pull me along or maybe I can offer them something. So I think it costs someone more not to join, even though there's a financial implication and a time implication. But I hear that a lot. I don't have time. I bet if you were to carve out an hour a month, I mean, or 2 hours a month, you could find it. And I would challenge people to look at that and say, you're missing out on so much and so much rich content by not joining that it's a disservice not to join. Does that make sense?
Totally. I mean, I think that you hit on it a little bit earlier, the networking aspects of NARPM and just listening to other people and how they've approached things has been so beneficial for me. And look, let's face it, you find people in NARPM that you can relate to and you could admire and you want to maybe model your company the way they have, or maybe it's their philosophies. And then there's some others that, hey, well, not so much, right? But I mean, I think being able to find that path and to see, okay, that's someone who I could aspire to be, or that's a company that I would like to consider myself in that class of an organization. I mean, having those kind of comparatives is, really important. And I think a great outcome of certainly being in NARPM. So COVID has obviously hurt some of the networking aspects. Mm-hmm. One thing I've noticed from National is you guys seem to be, maybe this is part of your leadership, but I've seen you National being much more communicative this year. Is that part of the strategy? And has that changed, I guess, during the COVID-19?
I will take a little credit for that because when COVID-19 first hit, the first thing, you know, I was communicating with Gail Phillips, our CEO, and Scott Abernathy, our president-elect, mm-hmm. quite a bit, and the rest of the board as much as we could. But my first thing was, I don't want to just be a talking head out there. It seemed like everyone, you know, a whole vacuum was filled on the Zoom platform and everyone was talking. And we strategically said, let's not do just everything everyone else is doing. Let's find, and I was, I don't know about you or your listeners, overwhelmed with the amount of information coming at me. And so what we talked mm-hmm. about was, let's have a COVID-19 landing page, resource page on the website. And it's right there. Anyone can get to it. And let's have members send their stuff in, or we'll grab it, and links from here and there. That, you know, there were podcasts and Facebook lives everywhere and forums flying everywhere and conversations everywhere. And to me, it was overwhelming. And part of what I strive for with my own organization and with NARPM is transparency. There's a lot of fear out there about what's going on. And yes, we do pride ourselves on the networking, but we also pride ourselves on the professionalism of the organization and all the other, you know, the ethics of the organization and, you know, the education part of it. We're offering all of the classes online now, live Zoom courses. So it's not a webinar, it's a live Zoom class. And that's something I'm really proud of, that we were able to pivot really quickly with a whole, like 20 instructors that were available, became available as soon as they could, to go from the classroom to the virtual classroom, the live classroom to virtual. And the education is something I think that we've done a really good job with. And we're looking at maybe redesigning those courses to make them more interactive, so that when they are virtual, we can still continue that platform moving forward, even when we can start meeting in person.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think you know this. I just took office as the Cal NARPM president, right? And that was one of my goals, was to communicate more. And I just have noticed that National is doing such a great job. I'm not sure how much room there, there really is for me to improve upon.
You got to be really strategic, right? You don't want to say what everybody else is saying. You want to have content. And so it's a tough call sometimes. And I've tried to do it maybe just with 1 or 2 minute videos, because I think that's kind of what people are responding to and what they'll hear too.
So. Right. I think that's great. I mean, and I think the education aspects of NARPM too. I mean, let's face it, there aren't that many educational opportunities for property managers. There certainly aren't here in California through our Department of Real Estate. Not to knock them. I mean, they're focused more on brokers, you know, selling, listing properties, all that kind of stuff. And while property management does fall under that regulation, there's just, you know, there's no place to really go. It's very, very basic. So that is a place where NARPM really, you know, stands out.
And that's one of the reasons why a lot of people join is to, well, and you don't have to be a member to take the education classes, but a lot of states will offer it as CE, continuing education, especially, you know, pre-COVID, a lot of the states would offer it, the live classes. And we're still looking into how we can get those virtually approved for virtual classes for continuing ed as well.
I'm a storyteller. When I meet with new clients, I always like to tell a personal story about myself. What do you got for us today? Is there a defining story that you could share with our listeners about Kelly, and maybe how your life was shaped by, or maybe your business career, by something that's happened?
Well, actually there is. Yeah. And I don't get into it very often, at least the origin of it. But, when I was a young girl, I just won't take that long. I'm not going to go through all the years of my life. So
you're good. We want to hear it.
So when I was 12 years old, my father passed away from bone cancer. And I guess in today's world, maybe there would have been a better treatment and so on. But this was in the early mid 70s. And of course, it was shocking. And then a year later, my father had been sick for a year. So it wasn't unexpected that he would pass. But at age 11 and 12, you didn't understand that. A year later, I had a younger sister who went to school one day and never came home. And she had passed away from an aneurysm that burst in the base of her neck. So within a year, I'd lost my father and my younger sister.
Oh my gosh.
That was, you know, a pivotal point in developing who I became. And what I realized, as, you know, fast forward into my 40s, I realized that I was living with fear, waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, when was the next tragic event going to happen? And all these years I've been living with this. So had the opportunity to see some skydivers one afternoon. And I thought to myself, that would be really fun. I'm more of a wind person than a water person.
It's one of my biggest fears, jumping out of a plane.
Yeah. Well, like I told you earlier, I never would have jumped out of that plane. I did a tandem jump, and that guy behind me that I was attached to, he pushed me, because I would never have jumped. I just would have gone back down to the ground. However, once I did it, and once I was in the air, and I realized I have never been as afraid as I was sitting at the door of that plane. And, you know, I remember looking back at the expert skydiver that I was attached to, just with carabiners, and he had the parachute on his back. And I said, you've done this before, right? And then we just scooted out of the plane and off we go. I get scared just thinking about it, right? And once I did it, it just unleashed the opportunities that I had been afraid of prior. And I thought, well, if I can, so many times my mantra became, if I can skydive or jump out of a plane, I can do this. If I can jump out of a plane, I can do that. And all of those things. And it really opened things up for me, especially with my leadership within NARPM, because there was so much fear about what could go wrong, that I could overcome those things. And I started taking more risks. And I know, like, applying for a leadership position in NARPM to some would not be a risk. For me, it was a huge risk. You know, like I mentioned, it took me 4 opportunities to become an RVP, and I kept trying and trying. And so that was a pivotal moment in my career, and it gave me the license, if you will, to try new things in my company. If they don't work, then you shift, you move, you move direction, and you maybe don't have all the answers. And it's okay if you're at least moving forward in a direction without fear. And that's overcoming that fear of just being afraid all the time was a big pivotal moment for me in my career, in my life, personally and professionally.
Sounds like it. Sounds a really cool story. And one that shares a little bit about yourself and the things you're able to do now because of having that experience. I have to ask, what was like the first 5 seconds like? Cause to me, this is terrifying. I don't think I'll ever do it.
So,
I mean, when you were in the air falling out of a plane.
So you have the opportunity before you, at least at the place I went to here in our area, you can, pay a little extra to go a little bit higher in the plane. So your free fall is a full 60 seconds versus a 30 second free fall. So I decided go big or go home. The thing that I remember is and they tell you this in the training, but the air is coming into your mouth so hard that you have to really force yourself to breathe out because your lungs are filling with the air that's coming in because of the gravity. And so I felt like I was going to suffocate. And so I was pushing my breath out, and then it gets pushed back into your lungs and forcing it out. And just, I don't know, it was an incredible experience. And then all of a sudden he pulls the chute and it's just entirely peaceful. Yeah. And I landed, Bob, and said, can I do that again? It was so exhilarating. And so I haven't been back doing it again, but it was really, and I think about all the different things I've done, you know, like speaking at convention in front of 700 people, I think, well, I've been skydiving. How hard can this be? And it is pretty hard. Yeah. It's scary, but I draw on that experience a lot.
Well, it's a cool story and I love your go for it attitude. And I can tell, you know, it's done a lot for you in terms of your willingness to put yourself out there. That's a hard thing to do.
It is.
You know, to put yourself out there and, like you said, shoot on goal multiple times to the NARPM organization to say, hey, I'm here. You know, what do you think? Yeah. Could I do this? And then look what you've done now. So we're eager to learn more about NARPM under your presidency. I can't wait to go to the PM Exchange, Leadership Exchange next week, and also NARPM National. I'll be doing it virtually just because I'm all the way in California, right, and can't leave home that week. But Kelly, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show today. I've really enjoyed meeting you and learning more about you and your interesting background. I would love to continue, but just in the interest of time, we have to kind of wrap things up. And I hope we can maintain this connection we've made here today.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
And hey, another kudos to you. You're now a brainstormer. You're an official brainstormer.
Yay.
You've been on the brainstormer.
It's always wonderful catching up with Kelly and chatting with her. Hopefully we can do it again sometime in a future episode.
As we wrap up today, I'd like to make a quick plug to our listeners to click on the subscribe button, give us a like, and if you would, please pay it forward with a positive review. Thank you for tuning in to Property Management Brainstorm, where we are always working hard to find new ways to advance the property management industry, and we will catch you next time.